Hello, and welcome to the West Valley News Digest. I'm Gayla Weigel Robinson, your volunteer reader. I start off with news of the week from the West Valley View, the newspaper of Avondale, Buckeye, Goodyear, Litchfield, Park, and Tolleson. Approximately 20 minutes after the hour, I'll read from the Wickenburg Sun, and around the half hour, I'll start reading news from the Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise Independents. Some of those news stories I'll be reading: Mayors discuss West Valley's future. Cities uniting for training center. Historic Downtown Glendale Group introduces festival. Amid Peoria Unified bond failure, district says it is looking to future collaboration. Our first news story then: Mayors discuss West Valley's future, by Alicia Vetner, West Valley View staff writer, posted on the November 20th weekly edition of the West Valley View. The Valley Partnership held its monthly morning breakfast on November 15th, bringing together three mayors from the West Valley to discuss the impact of Proposition 479, housing and future development in the region. Buckeye Mayor Eric Orsborn, Goodyear Mayor Joe Pizzillo, and Surprise Mayor Skip Hall joined Charlie Freericks, president of Howard Hughes Phoenix Region, in an hour-long panel conversation, representing their respective cities alongside the Greater West Valley. "The West Valley works very tight together," Pizzillo said. "We have an excellent working group." Together, the mayors reinforced the collaborative nature of their jobs as councils from as many as 11 municipalities prepare for the wave of new residents expected in their cities in the next 25 years. Simultaneously, they are still ensuring the cities meet the needs of their longtime citizens. "One of the largest issues the cities face is traffic congestion," the mayors noted, "partially because over half of their residents commute on the I-10 out of their home cities to work in Scottsdale, Phoenix, or other cities to the east." Each of the cities represented at the panel have already experienced tremendous population growth, and it is only expected to climb. More than half of Maricopa County's predicted growth is expected to take place in the West Valley. Funds from the passage of Proposition 479, the continuation of a dedicated half-cent sales tax to fund transportation in the county, will go towards major intersections in the region and alleviate congestion. The mayors discussed how this funding, alongside an effort to bring better local jobs to the West Valley, will help traffic. "We're the ninth fastest growing city of a city our size right now, and the whole West is going up. Everybody on this stage right now sees massive growth into the city, so we're trying to stay ahead of it," Pizzillo said. Goodyear has several hundred million dollars in infrastructure set to transform the city, particularly its downtown, Pizzillo said, and the passage of Proposition 479 will help provide alternate routes beyond I-10 to facilitate development. In Buckeye, Orsborn specifically noted how the proposition will help improve Jack Rabbit Trail and Thomas Road down to Van Buren Road. "Travel in the east edge of Buckeye is going to be completely different than it has ever been, much easier to traverse in and out, and that's super important," he said. Housing was another topic of discussion at the morning panel. In Surprise, only 4% of its housing is multifamily apartments, and Hall is working to grow that number. Last year, Surprise built 2,368 apartment units and is building more this year as well. "We have to have more diverse housing," Hall said. "Surprise is a poster child for not having enough kinds of housing." Pizzillo shared a similar sentiment, echoing the need for more housing and adding that more businesses will move into the region if there are more housing opportunities and residential growth. The Greater Phoenix Economic Council predicts that Buckeye's population will grow to 295,400 by 2040, after just officially reaching 100,000 people in 2021. Meanwhile, Buckeye's planning area is only built out by a fraction, with hundreds of square miles left for residential, commercial, and industrial development, said Orsborn. Adding more homes is not going to be an issue in Buckeye, Orsborn said. There is a need for jobs in the community, so that 88% of our population doesn't jump on I-10 and go east, he said. An example of this effort to bring local jobs into Buckeye includes the development of Coreplex, a future gigafactory site by Core Power in Buckeye, expected to provide residents thousands of jobs. Orsborn also described the need for an airport in Buckeye, the plans of which are in early development. The ambitious plans for the airport includes development of a runway to accommodate cargo and military operations to alleviate pressure on Sky Harbor and Goodyear airports. The city is coordinating with Luke Air Force Base to avoid interference with their operations. When we're growing to 1.5 million people, I think that warrants an airport in the West Valley, Orsborn said. I think there would be a demand for that, and consumers that would go out there and fly would find it much easier to get to that location. That was Mayors Discuss West Valley's Future. Our next article from the West Valley View, Cities Uniting for Training Center, by Alicia Ventner, West Valley View staff writer. Since the Glendale Regional Public Safety Training Center opened in 2007, West Valley municipalities have managed the facility, the Valley's only shared-use training center in the Valley. Avondale, Glendale, Peoria, Surprise, and the Maricopa County Community College District share the responsibilities and benefits of funding and maintaining the $45 million facility at 115th Avenue and Glendale Avenue. Avondale committed to continuing this partnership during its city council meeting on November 4th. The governing body approved a 5-year intergovernmental agreement outlining the pro-rate share formula to adjust the costs each municipality bears for the center's maintenance. The Glendale Regional Public Safety Training Center is a 56-acre training site that includes all the facilities required to train new firefighters and improve the skills of fire and police officers. The main building is 70,000 square feet, including classrooms, a physical training room, a computer lab, and candidate testing facilities. Additional features include a 5-story drill tower, a simulated fire station, a burn house, and props that officers can use to simulate emergencies and disasters, according to the City of Glendale website. The new intergovernmental agreement approved by the City of Avondale reduces the terms of the agreement to 5 years in comparison to the original 30-year agreement. It also increased the city's commitment to funding the center's operations, given its additional usage of the facility. Initially, the Avondale Fire and Medical Department participated in the original 30-year agreement. In 2019, the department transferred its partnership in the center to the Avondale Police Department, as it has specific training requirements that existing facilities could not meet. 3 years later, the Avondale Police Department and other West Valley Police Departments created a police academy through the Maricopa County Community College District that is hosted at the facility. Now, the Avondale Fire and Medical Department is using the training center to train firefighter recruits alongside the police department's use to train new police officers. As such, given a new pro rata share formula based on which partners are using the facility, the City of Avondale is increasing its share of the center from 3.9% to 11.5% for costs. The estimated cost for this fiscal year is $184,000, and the city will transfer vacancy savings from the police department to the Office of Public Safety to cover additional costs for this year. Alongside these changes, the intergovernmental agreement also creates a formula by which other fire or police departments can join the partnership and what their costs will be. Other police departments have expressed interest in joining the Glendale Regional Public Safety Training Center, the city stated in the action report, and with each partner that joins, the cost to the other partners is lowered. It also established that the home agency is responsible for all personnel costs related to the recruiting, training officers and instructors for the Fire Training Academy, and it defines how additional partners must pay a one-time buy-in for capital projects at the facility. That was Cities Uniting for Training Center. Next, Goodyear Updates Pavement Cut Policy by Alicia Vetner, West Valley View staff writer. The Goodyear Public Works Department is updating the city's pavement cut policy to combat the effect of the city's growth. The policy will focus on the restoration and repair of streets and subsequently extending their longevity at a lower cost. The Public Works Department presented its proposed policy before Goodyear City Council during its work session on November 4th, and it is set to go into effect January 8th. This proposed policy update is about preservation and protection of one of our most valuable assets in the city of Goodyear, which is our streets, said Sumit Mohan, Public Works Director. Pavement cutting removes sections of asphalt or concrete for repairs, modifications, or new construction. Utility companies, developers, and city crews cut into the city streets as Goodyear grows. This can weaken the road, create uneven surfaces, and require additional repairs. In effect since 2012, the pavement cut policy focuses on a pavement cut surcharge, imposing minimal fees for cuts into pavements less than 36 months, and no pavement cut surcharge or older payments. According to the Public Works Department, these fees bring minimal funds, insufficient for future pavement restoration projects. An example of the current policy, Mohan said, is a portion of Yuma Road, which became a quilt work of patches soon after construction 2 years ago. A pavement cut damages the road more than it may appear from the surface, as the negative impacts can go several feet deep into the road. With a small patch repair, water can seep around the edges and weaken the pavement. That is what we are trying to avoid, Mohan said. The new pavement cut policy would focus on pavement restoration in the long term and eliminate surcharge fees. It will require pavement cuts to be repaired with new asphalt and crack sealing and a secondary asphalt treatment. A secondary treatment provides an extra layer to prevent water from seepage. For roads with pavements less than 2 years old, secondary treatment would include an asphalt overlay or inlay treatment to the entire width of the impacted travel lanes. For older roads, the secondary treatment would be a micro-seal treatment to have the width of an arterial or collector street, or slurry seal treatment to the full width of a local street. Regardless of age, the secondary treatment would extend 25 feet in both directions from the cuts. The proposed policy is similar to those in Phoenix and Chandler. In order to manage our right-of-way, we need to make sure that our streets are maintained in the best possible condition for today, tomorrow, and into the future. We believe that this proposed policy update will do exactly that, he added. Then Councilmember Bill Stipp, though in support, raised concerns regarding the costs the 25 feet per side requirements would impose on developers. Usually, the development requires these pavement cuts, but Stipp said the state legislature should consider action. We are growing very quickly, Stipp said. Chandler isn't doing very many road cuts, so no one's going to complain about what's happening in Chandler. But when Goodyear starts to do it, and then Buckeye starts to do it, and then Peoria starts to do it, who are going through excessive amounts of growth, then we are going to start again putting on a t-shirt that has a bullseye on it. But it doesn't change my support of the program. That was Goodyear Updates Pavement Cut Policy. Next, Goodyear may prohibit urban camping, by Alicia Ventner, West Valley View staff writer. The city of Goodyear is seeking to curb urban camping by homeless people. During its November 4th work session, Goodyear City Council reviewed a proposed amendment to Article 11-1 of the city's code, making sleeping or camping on public property a Class 1 misdemeanor. The recent Supreme Court decision, Johnson v. Grant, expands the restrictions that can be enacted against anyone partaking in urban camping. That can include sleeping in a hammock in greenways or in tents in parks and parking lots. This includes homeless people living on public property. The draft ordinance presented before the City Council would prohibit camping and peripheral activities, like using tents, storing personal belongings, making a fire, or cooking activities within 500 feet of a school, child care facility, shelter, or park. Under this ordinance, urban camping would be punishable by up to $2,500 in fines, 6 months in jail, and 3 years probation. Goodyear Police Officer Scott Daniel said the city's homeless outreach team does not focus on arresting people, but just knows it has a tool if individuals don't want help. Their mission remains the same, he said, trying to provide for homeless people. Our biggest goal is not to arrest. It's just to make those contacts, build those relationships, and to see if we can help them go where they need to, Daniel, assigned to the outreach team, said. During the work session, city representatives referenced Gilbert, Glendale, and Phoenix as additional cities that have enacted restrictions against sleeping or camping on public property. Each of those cities has homeless shelters, albeit not necessarily run by the municipality and instead managed by nonprofits. There are no homeless shelters in Goodyear. Instead, the city utilizes its partnership with Phoenix Rescue Mission and Community Bridges Incorporated, or CBI, to take homeless people to shelters in Phoenix or surrounding cities. There are no shelters in a lot of cities. The majority of the cities refer back to the shelters with CBI and Phoenix Rescue. Also, there are some churches that will do outreach for a night, and we have those resources as well that will call up, vet, and say, "Hey, he's in need of just a bed for tonight," so we can get him enrolled into this program, Daniel said. At the beginning of 2024, 30 homeless people were living in Goodyear, according to Goodyear Police Chief Brian Issett. This number is an increase from 22 at the beginning of 2023. Furthermore, the homeless outreach team has access to funds for emergencies, and officers can get them into a hotel for the night if there are no beds available at a shelter. The city's homeless outreach team establishes and maintains programs that help the homeless population, establishing procedures to guide offers in their contacts with unhoused individuals. The intent of this ordinance, the city stated in the draft amendment, is to protect public health and preserve public places for Goodyear residents and visitors. It would be another tool for the homeless outreach team, Izzet said, and the police department will create a standard operating procedure on the correct way to use this ordinance. Several council members expressed their approval for the ordinance. "It's about time," Council Member Vicki Gillis said. Council Member Sherry Loretano said she believes this ordinance was handled with compassion. She stressed that this ordinance encourages homeless people to seek services offered by the city and nonprofits. "This is definitely a tool in your toolbox for those that don't want services or maybe they're not ready for services and need a little extra motivation," Laurentano said. More information about the Goodyear Homeless Outreach Team, go to goodyearaz.gov. That was Goodyear May Prohibit Urban Camping. Now from the Wickenburg Sun, two abbreviated articles. Pereira Makes 50 Over 50 List by Kirk McKnight, Editor. As the Foundation for Senior Living, or FSL, celebrates its 50th year, the organization decided to recognize 50 others who have celebrated at least 50 of their own. In September, FSL announced its inaugural 50 Over 50 list. According to the FSL website, honorees of this award were recognized for their service and dedication to helping Arizonans age with confidence. Last month, during FSL's 50th anniversary celebration in Phoenix, this award recognizes older adults whose tireless commitments have woven safety and well-being into the very fabric of our community, said FSL President and CEO Tammy Bohannon. "Many of these individuals have dedicated their time and treasures to our community for years. We applaud their efforts and appreciate their service and commitment to ensure future generations of Arizonans will continue to thrive." Among the 50 honorees was Wickenburg Mayor Rui Pereira. "It was a surprise to have been selected and to be part of a list of individuals who have done a lot of work for the senior community in Arizona," said Pereira regarding the recognition. "To be on that list for me was a big honor." The second abbreviated article, Council Approves Contract with Cactus Asphalt by Claire Halliburton. At Town Council's Monday night, November 18th meeting, a contract with Cactus Asphalt regarding a reallocation of funds to pavement preservation was approved. According to the Town Council report, staff is requesting the approval of a cooperative contract with Cactus Asphalt for Phase 2 paving of Tegner Street from Soles Wash to the traffic light. The report continued, "The contract also includes pavement markings, traffic control, and cleanup." The quote is in the amount of $817,690.01, but staff is asking for approval not to exceed $900,000 in the event of change orders or additional work is deemed necessary during the project. The quote and bid requirements will be satisfied utilizing an executed job order contract, or JOC, number 234128ROQ, between Cactus Asphalt and Pinell County for asphalt and maintenance and repair services. Per the report, the project came in under budget, and town staff is requesting that the unused funds be allocated to pavement preservation projects elsewhere, which are at risk of not being completed. The report stated, "The Tegner Street repaving project came in under budget, resulting in a surplus of $100,000. Concurrently, the Service to Maintain Streets Fund, which finances the town's pavement preservation efforts, has encountered higher than anticipated costs. This discrepancy has created a shortfall that jeopardizes the completion of several planned street maintenance projects. We take a brief break here to remind you that you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour news and information service for people unable to read or hold print material due to a disability, and this is the West Valley News Digest. We now turn to news of the week from the Glendale Independent. Our first story, Historic Downtown Glendale Group introduces festival, posted on yourvalley.net, Glendale Independent, November 22nd. A new event is coming to the historic Catlin Court District of downtown Glendale. The historic Downtown Glendale Family Fun Festival and Marketplace will launch from 2 to 10 p.m. Saturday, November 30th. Attendees can enjoy live music, food trucks, art and craft vendors, local shopping and dining, and much more. Several nonprofit organizations will also be on site to kick off the season of giving. Nearly 24 vintage vehicles will be on display along 58th Drive from the Finicera Classic Car Club. The car club has participated in many events throughout the Southwest. The festival will take place monthly with seasonal hours throughout the year. The event is free. Catlin Court Retail District features a collection of locally owned unique boutiques, specialty stores, cultural attractions, public art installations, and independent eateries. The shops and restaurants are in authentic early and mid-century craftsman bungalows and ranch-style National Register buildings. The area spans several pedestrian-friendly blocks from 59th Avenue to 57th Drive and Myrtle Avenue to Palmer Avenue. A family-friendly festival has been a dream of mine for many years, and I am honored to partner with Historic Downtown Glendale to bring this special event to the community, Martin Sanchez, event founder, stated in a press release. Sanchez is an Arizona native, Historic Downtown Glendale business owner, and has 4 decades of event planning experience. Free covered parking is available at the Palmer Parking Structure, 5835 West Palmer Avenue. There is also storefront parking available. For information about the event, including becoming a vendor, check out www.azfamilyfestivals.com. The Downtown Glendale Family Fun Festival and Marketplace is presented by AZ Family Festivals, the Historic Downtown Glendale Merchants Association, and the City of Glendale. Our next article, Deer Valley Unified Schools off next week for Thanksgiving, posted online November 22nd. Deer Valley Unified Schools will be off for a week for Thanksgiving, with winter break right around the corner. All 42 district schools will be closed November 25th through 29th for Thanksgiving break. Looking ahead, the district will observe winter break from Monday, December 23rd through Monday, January 6th. Arizona schools are required to be closed on Veterans Day, MLK Jr. Day, and President's Day if they take place within the school week. MLK Jr. Day falls on January 20th, and President's Day will be February 17th. The next meeting of the District Governing Board will be 7 p.m. Tuesday, December 10th. That was Deer Valley Unified Schools off next week for Thanksgiving. Next from yourvalley.net, state and local leaders look to bolster semiconductor job pipeline by Brent Ruffner, posted online November 19th. The state of Arizona is helping to bolster attention on newly expanded registered technician apprenticeship programs to help the region's semiconductor industry grow. On Tuesday, a group that included Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs and Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company Arizona President Rose Castaneras announced new apprenticeships and programs at Arizona colleges that are paired with the needs of TSMC in North Phoenix. The Arizona Commerce Authority is investing $4 million that will go towards helping fill the talent pipeline and build infrastructure for apprenticeship programs specifically in the semiconductor industry, said Patrick Patak, Executive Vice President of Executive Initiatives at the Arizona Commerce Authority. The $4 million will go towards hiring instructors, supporting curriculum development, as well as promoting it to Arizonans, he said. TSMC Arizona is investing more than $5 million in this program, representing on-the-job training hours and education tuition support for its apprentice employees as they earn their apprenticeships, a press release stated. Estrella Mountain Community College, Grand Canyon University, Western Maricopa Education Center, Northern Arizona University, and Rio Salado College are among the schools participating, a press release stated. As cutting-edge companies like TSMC continue to create jobs here in Arizona, we are working together to provide the innovative training and partnerships needed to make those jobs attainable for our community, said Dr. Ray Rivera, president of Estrella Mountain Community College, in a press release. Whether students are looking to start a new career or learn new skills to earn a promotion, this first-of-its-kind apprenticeship program is a life-changing addition to our industry-supported automated industrial technology program. In the recent past, Arizona State University has benefited from about $400 million for research and development through different funding sources, such as the CHIPS and Science Act, and through a partnership with the Arizona Commerce Authority, according to Zachary Holman, an associate professor in the School of Electrical, Computer, and Energy Engineering at ASU. One challenge is addressing the industry shortage of both engineers and technicians, said Terry Alford, professor and associate director for the School of Engineering of Matter, Transport, and Energy at the Ira A. Fulton School of Engineering at Arizona State University. We wouldn't be able to fulfill the need even if we graduated everybody, Alford said in September 2023. But TSMC hopes working with the colleges now will get them the talent it needs. TSMC hopes to recruit and hire nearly 130 new apprentices and trainees in 2025, according to a press release. The programs allow students to help become equipment and process technicians, according to the TSMC website. An equipment technician is responsible for performing preventative maintenance activities on state-of-the-art semiconductor equipment, while a process technician monitors wafer processing, responds to alarms, and analyzes risk, according to the TSMC website. The process technician works to manage production efficiency and quality through the team and company leadership, the website stated. TSMC is accepting program applications from now until February 19th. The apprenticeship program start date is April 21st. For more information, please visit https://www.tsmc.com/static/about-smcaz/apprenticeship.htm. That was State and Local Leaders Look to Bolster Semiconductor Job Pipeline. Next, West Valley Symphony will present free holiday concert in Glendale. Posted on yourvalley.net Glendale Independent, November 15th. The West Valley Symphony is bringing a holiday concert to Glendale. The free public concert, Sounds of the Season, is coming to the auditorium at Midwestern University, 19555 North 59th Avenue, with a 2 p.m. matinee show on Saturday, December 7th. The concert is open to all residents and will feature timeless songs for the holiday season. The program will include traditional favorites, such as Tyzek's arrangement of Behold the Lights and selections by Prokofiev, Tchaikovsky, and Vaughan Williams, among others. The West Valley Symphony, which has provided live classical music for more than 50 years, is conducted by Nicholas Ross. Seating is available for Sounds of the Season on a first-come, first-served basis. While admission is free, guests must RSVP at https://www.midwestern.edu/soundsoftheseason by Sunday, December 1st. Now we go to news of the week from the Peoria Independent. Peoria sees high voter turnout for general election. City Council is scheduled to canvass general election next week. Posted online November 22nd by Philip Haldeman. Peoria City Council will canvass the general election next week, November 25th. The canvass is the act that declares the election results official, and Arizona state law requires the canvass be completed not less than 6 days and not more than 20 days following the election. The deadline for this election's canvass is November 25th. There are 123,860 registered voters in Peoria, and 103,116 of them voted in the general election, resulting in an 83.25% voter turnout. There were three City of Peoria items on the ballot this year: council member for Ironwood District, council member for Willow District, and Proposition 496, an EPCOR water franchise agreement. The Peoria Unified School District-related ballot items were canvassed by the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors November 21st. For the Peoria Council races, Ironwood District candidate Rick Stokes received 10,377 votes. He ran unopposed. Willow District candidate John Edwards received 12,997 votes, and write-in candidate Angeli Wesson received 1,146 votes. Stokes and Edwards will be sworn in on or after the first Monday in January 2025 for 4-year terms. According to the canvass, Proposition 496 received 51,116 yes votes and 34,714 no votes. The agreement states the water company will construct, maintain, and operate a water and wastewater utility in the city and future annexations. It is a 25-year contract. The voter turnout was 80% in all of Maricopa County, the third largest voting jurisdiction in the country. For the presidential election, the county saw 2,078,460 ballots cast, which was the second most ever for the county. Maricopa County has 2,587,197 registered voters. That was Peoria Sees High Voter Turnout for General Election. Our next article from the Peoria Independent. Amid Peoria Unified Bond Failure, District Says It Is Looking to Future Collaboration, by Philip Haldeman, posted online Friday, November 22nd. With the failure of the $120 million bond authorization for the Peoria Unified School District, officials say they are looking to the future. The final official count shows 53.46%, or 60,540 voters rejected the bond, while 46.54%, or 52,704 voters supported it, according to Maricopa County Elections. Superintendent K.C. Summers said the election results were not what he had hoped for, but his commitment to supporting the learning environments of the district's more than 35,000 students remains unwavering. With our recent A rating from the Arizona Department of Education, we are reminded of the excellence our community values and the high demand for the exceptional educational experiences we provide, Sommer said. I look forward to collaborating with our new governing board members as we chart a path forward together. An approved bond would have authorized Peoria Unified to sell up to $120 million in bonds to maintain existing facilities, increase safety and security, upgrade technology, and purchase additional school buses. The bond would also have included funds for a new elementary school. The last time voters approved a bond for Peoria Unified was in 2012. PUSD Governing Board member Melissa Ewing, who voted for the bond, said there is a lot of support when it comes to public education. But when it comes to the election in Peoria, supporting schools is partisan. If you are a Democrat, you support the bond, and if you are a Republican, you don't. The bond still has 46% support, and that needs to be built on, and there is opportunity for that. I still have a lot of hope in our community to support our schools, Ewing said. The outcome shows a larger challenge with public education not being well-funded in the state, and the legislature's unwillingness to invest in public education. But that does not mean there is not support for our schools. Looking forward, the PUSD Governing Board will take on a new look in the coming year. That was, amid Peoria Unified bond failure, district says it is looking to future collaboration. In a related article, Proud Fit, Boyles, and Toby will win Peoria Unified board seats by Philip Haldeman, posted online November 18th. Becky Proudfit, Janelle Bowles, and Jeffrey Toby will win the three open seats on the five-seat Peoria Unified Governing Board, according to unofficial results. The final count shows Proudfit had 19.63%, or 51,099 votes. Bowles has 18.57%, or 48,349 votes, and Toby had 18.28%, or 47,586 votes, according to unofficial results. These three candidates will be sworn in at a public meeting in December. Nearly 130,000 residents voted in this school board election, with a turnout of nearly 82%. The three other candidates on the ballot were David Sandoval with 16.6%, or 43,222 votes, Melissa Grimsheed with 14.65%, or 38,126 votes, and Micah Dyer with 12.27%, or 31,934 votes, according to unofficial results. Proudfit said she is extremely humbled and honored for receiving such support during the election. I think that the voters resonated deeply with my overarching message of keeping politics out of the classroom, she said. I am not a politician and hope that I continue to demonstrate that every student matters and every voice in our community also matters. I look forward to building upon the great success of the past year and working with our exceptional administration and staff to create the brightest opportunities possible for all Peoria students. Toby said he is deeply honored by the trust the community placed in him. He said he is committed to making PUSD schools safer, improving academic achievement, and ensuring every tax dollar is maximized for the benefit of the students. Toby said he is eager to roll up his sleeves and deliver the results students and families deserve. Our district must remain focused on growth, constantly self-assessing and self-correcting. My priorities include completing critical safety measures, ensuring every child can read proficiently by third grade, and achieving our strategic goals within the resources we have, he said. As a father of four children in the district, I bring not only professional expertise, but also a personal fatherly instinct to love, protect, and nurture our most precious assets, our children. Bowles did not respond with a comment. Now we go to news of the week from the Surprise Independent. Simon's Prasada Shopping Center helps reform Face of Surprise by Jason Stone, posted on yourvalley.net Surprise Independent November 22nd. Some developers bring projects to a city to make a quick buck, while others become an integral part of the fabric and look of a city. Josh Simon is in the latter category. "We don't take that lightly," Simon said. "It's an important torch to carry. This is a big impact." Simon's group, Simon CRE, is changing the face of Surprise in three different areas, most notably the Prasada area, which has seen massive growth in the last 2 years, all thanks to Simon. He's also helping to develop the large vacant part of the city center and a needed area of Asante in North Surprise. The 39-year-old Simon joked it was dumb luck how he got in position to have such an impact on the face of Surprise. "A lot of it is luck," Simon said. "I got involved with the project at the right time, right when Surprise was kind of getting on the map in a new way." The village at Prasada, which is east of Loop 303 and north and south of Waddell Road, is on pace to be the number one sales tax generator for the city next year. The 700,000-square-foot center creates more than 2,500 jobs to the local economy. "That is pretty impactful," Simon said, recalling his center a place to connect, celebrate special occasions, eat, and shop. Initial concepts for the Prasada project go back as far as 5 years, to when Costco first opened in Surprise. It was touch and go at first, because plans were drawn up right when the COVID-19 pandemic hit. "Nobody wanted to talk to us because stores were closed down," Simon recalled. "But now it's a lot of luck because of a retail renaissance after COVID. We were at the right place at the right time. A lot of work goes into it, but it's much easier to rise with the tide when the tide is rising rather than fighting against it." Part of the early success of Prasada is a variety of food choices in the area, including what has become a restaurant row. Establishments such as Firebird's Wood Grill, Oso Brewery, Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers, and Lou Malnati's Pizza are now. "People thought I was nuts putting that on paper," Simon said. "My favorite part is to be able to walk to another restaurant or feel that energy of the other restaurants." Patios were deliberately placed to face each other to add to the community. Simon said additional enhancements, such as seating and community artwork, are coming for the area. "We're extremely happy with the performance of it from a management perspective," Simon said. "It's been really good growth for us as a developer and owner." Simon said the mix of tenants was selective and thoughtfully planned out. He did not want duplicates of the same types of business. "That's why there is only one nail salon, one eyeglass store, one sub shop, and one sit-down restaurant for breakfast. It's so all of our tenants can have success," Simon said. Other biggies to move in over the past year and a half include Dick's Sporting Goods, Kohl's, PetSmart, Hobby Lobby, and Five Below. Because of all the action, parking and traffic issues are the main complaints some shoppers have expressed to Simon and his people. But Simon sees that as a good thing. If that's the biggest complaint about our center, then we're doing our job right, Simon said. That's a place people want to be in. Simon compares the growth of Prasada to that of Desert Ridge in North Phoenix. He said parking and traffic have always been a problem there because it is a success. That means the center is doing really well, Simon said. If the center was empty, they would say there is too much parking. At Surprises City Center, Simon joined in a couple years ago to help the Surprise Center Development Company finish out plans for the square mile in the middle of the city. He said the first two tenants off the newly created Elm Street will be opening by the end of the year, and more unannounced plans are in the works. At Asante, Simon's group is breaking ground on the first phase, but he hasn't yet said what's coming. His company will be developing 44 of the 70 acres on the southwest corner of 163rd Avenue and Pat Tillman Boulevard. It's not just Surprise where Simon has made an impact. His group is also working on projects at Vistancia in Peoria, Verado in Buckeye, and Roosevelt Avenue in Phoenix, and a 36-acre site in East Mesa. The company also has a hand in sites in Idaho, New Mexico, and Washington. Simon's family moved him to Arizona from Chicago in 1997 when he was only 12. He attended Paradise Valley High School, then graduated from Pinnacle High School after it opened up in North Phoenix. Simon got his degree at Arizona State University and started his company 15 years ago during the Great Recession. I was fascinated by construction growing up, Simon said. The smell of asphalt I was always interested in. When you have a passion, the rest kind of falls into place. That was Simon's Prasada Shopping Center Helps Reform Face of Surprise. Next, Surprise City Leader and School District Thank Community After Blocked Bids by Della Rita Ford, posted on YourValley.net Surprise Independent, November 21st. This past election may have dashed many aspirations, from unrequited school funding to unsuccessful candidacies, but optimism and thankfulness was expressed to the community regardless of results. After halted hopes of being the next City of Surprise mayor, Councilmember Allie Klein held one of her last District 2 meetings November 19th at the Grand. A longtime community resident, Klein hosted her regular monthly meetings on site. Klein, whose council term ends in December, will be succeeded in January by a fellow resident, Earl Greenberg, who served as a past president of the Community's Homeowners Association. Thank you very much for allowing me to be your council member for the last 4 years, said Klein, who is not having a District 2 meeting in December. Taking a break before her term ends, she encouraged people to enjoy the holidays and gave her constituents what they were used to receiving at her meetings, information about the community and city happenings, refreshments, souvenirs, guest speakers, even offering suggestions on what the Dysart Unified School District can do after the $127 million bond request was overwhelmingly rejected by voters. The bond did not pass, said Klein when asked the status during her meeting at the Grand, which was among selected sites the district visited to educate residents before they voted on the bond item slated for the November 5th general election ballot. The bond would have funded the district's efforts on improving safety and security measures, replacing school buses, renovating facilities, constructing a new elementary school, and buying land for a new high school, both in the Northwest Asante area. Surprise has a lot of growth, said Klein, We have more people moving here, and a lot of people moved in to Surprise. She noted the district's need to accommodate the population boom by getting land for a new high school and building an elementary school in the rapidly growing northwestern part of the municipality. They need 40 acres. They need a big pile of dirt to do that, said Klein. While saying she did not speak for the district, Klein responded to residents asking what Dysart Schools would do about the needs, since the bond failed. She mentioned options the district could consider if they wanted, from redistricting to working with developers, but the school board has to decide what to do. They could lease their buses instead of buying their buses, she added. Klein also countered sentiments of another resident who stated the downside of the school bond passing if some people were unable to afford their property taxes increasing and possibly losing their home as a result. But it's not like they just sneak up on you and take your home, she said of notices possibly sent a year before as a warning. Despite a bond defeat, Dysart officials were thankful to those who supported the measure. Officials are looking at their next steps in continuing to educate district students. The district's last $122 million bond approved in 2006 will be paid off in fiscal year 2028. I am very grateful for everyone that participated in voting. I am sad that it didn't pass, but I know that this district will do great things going forward without the bond. I am excited to see what's to come, said DUSD Governing Board Member Jennifer Drake about the bond during the November 14th board meeting. Wishing people a happy Thanksgiving, Drake added she wanted to reflect on what we're thankful for, like family, friends, etc. That was Surprise City Leader and School District Thank Community After Blocked Bids. And that concludes this week's edition of the West Valley News Digest. I'm Gayla, your volunteer reader. Thank you for joining me, and please stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds of Arizona.